Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Riker, sponsored by Bagwell Syllable Bag Holder, born before 64, First Light Home Care, Leroy's Ketchup, Telekin Computers, Wolfgang Puck Ice Coffee, and ZX Kitchen Knives. This is Independent Talk 1100, KFNX.
Hi, this is Katherine Riker of Let's Just Talk. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving and you're still celebrating the Thanksgiving weekend. We have three wonderful guests today, and our guests are, to start off with, Sean Collins, Phil Proctor, and Nancy Allegressa. And our first guest is Sean Collins, and he will be discussing his new book, Letters to My Unborn Children, Meditations on the Silent Grief of a Miscarriage. In Letters to Unborn Children, Sean details the journey he and his wife took as they suffered through three miscarriages. He talks about he, as a father, was often sidestepped by others in the grieving process. He also details the process that he and his wife shared in working through their grief and how they integrated the miscarriages into their family. Their healing process involved music and talking through the pain, but also sharing it with their living children. Sean founded TMB Pamoja LLC in 2012 to manage the publishing and distribution of Letters to My Unborn Children. And I want to welcome to our show today, this afternoon, Sean Collins. Hello.
Hi, Katherine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, and I hope I didn't mispronounce your business name. And if you could pronounce it, it means walk together. So
it means walk together. It's a Swahili term, and it's pronounced Tembea Pamoja.
Tembea Pamoja. Okay.
Right.
And why that term?
I was. My parents were missionaries in Kenya, so I lived there for the first 17 years of my life, and I wanted to set up a company to manage how Letters to My Unborn Children was published and distributed, and I thought that having a Swahili term would be a unique way to set up the company, and I also wanted to get something that had that sense of walking together, because that's been a theme that Christine and I have grown into, and it's also a theme that sort of represents our hope as we tell our story, that we can walk together with others who grieve.
Mm-hmm. Why did you write the letters to my unborn children? This, you know, most people want to get over it right away, it seems. And not necessarily reflect on it all the time. And that may sound cold, but that's the way I see a lot of people reacting.
It's true. There's a lot of, I think, a common assumption is when you have a crisis, be it miscarriage or something else, that the way you move forward is you get over it, you recover, you follow a recovery, you know, 10 steps to recovery. And I think what it started is simply I needed to journal, and so I wrote, and as I wrote, my identity changed. I stopped seeing the miscarriage as something that had only happened to Christine, and I was able to articulate that I was a grieving father and I had lost something. And I kept writing through our miscarriages and began to look at what was out there for miscarriage in general and for grieving fathers in particular. And I was looking at this originally in 2007, and in the last 5 years there's been a lot more that's been produced. But by and large, fathers are fairly silent when you talk about miscarriage. So I felt like this was a good opportunity to give voice to that experience.
Now, she lost three children, three miscarriages, correct? How far was she in her term?
We did. Each one was in the first trimester, somewhere between 6 and 9 weeks. I think it was, you know, 7, 9, and 6, or thereabouts.
Uh-huh. Did you have other children?
We do. We have, after our first two miscarriages, then we had two girls were born in 2000, in 2005, and then our second daughter was born in 2008. So we had our first two miscarriages were in 2004. Then two girls were born, and our third miscarriage was in 2010, and our youngest daughter was born in 2011.
So you have three children. You're not still trying, are you?
Right. We have three living children, and we are content with three living children.
Has there been a thought when you had two to quit or not?
There was. I think part of it was we knew that it was possible we would have another miscarriage, and we had done a lot of work after our girls were born. I mean, we went from the second miscarriage right into we got pregnant with Elise, and so we just didn't have a whole lot of time to reflect on the miscarriages until after our second daughter, Carice, was born. And as we started to talk about that and started to talk about walking together, then when we faced the question of do we try for another child, I think one of the big concerns was what if we have another miscarriage. But part of it was just for us the two versus three kids question, and the more we talked about it, the more we decided there wasn't a right or a wrong answer. It was just a decision we had to make.
That decision,
right.
Right. Is, you know, we talked ahead of time, and my daughter lost her first child on Mother's Day. And
right.
I know how we grieved with both of them, my son-in-law and my daughter, because she was 39 or 38 at the time, and it was her first child.
Well.
And then about a year later, she actually got pregnant with our granddaughter, who's two, Cassie, Cassandra. But she had to stay on bed rest for probably 5 months.
Well.
Was that a concern of yours when your wife was carrying the children? Did she have to go on bed rest?
She didn't, and that was one of the things we've learned as we've gone through this is how in many ways our stories are similar, and yet so many of the details are different. And so there are things about our experience that I won't say we're grateful for, but are certainly it's a different kind of stress. And so in our case, it was really we just had to get through the first 12 weeks because that was, I mean, we lost all three of our children, our unborn children, in the first trimester, and so we didn't really view pregnancy was always a dark time, but with our three living girls, the pregnancies by and large were without any other concerns. So the milestone for us was really getting through that first trimester and then sort of holding on. Although we did, with our youngest daughter, Claire, we did try really hard to say we're not going to just treat pregnancy as this terrible time that we try and get through where we're miserable, that we'll try and say that even though pregnancy has historically been difficult for us, we can look forward to a new life coming at the end of that 40 weeks of waiting.
Right. Now, what do you think people would benefit from reading letters to my unborn children?
I think that there's a couple different aspects to that. One is, like you mentioned earlier, you know, we tend to assume that when we have a crisis, we need to get over it, and we need to just find a recovery plan, be it a faith-based recovery plan or a non-faith-based recovery plan. But my experience was that, the way that I've walked through this and the way that I've walked beside others when I've been fortunate enough to do that, the way that we can most effectively enter into our grief is to tell stories to each other. And so this Letters to My Unborn Children, you know, definitely comes out of that storytelling mode that says that it's part of our life. The darkness is not the only thing about the miscarriages that defines that. And so we can use that experience to, you know, as we encounter other things. But I think the second thing is that even though there's more discussion about fathers in miscarriage, it's still very rare. So understanding that there is a father who's telling his story, and that means that somebody can read my story and, as a grieving father, can be given the permission to grieve, and as a grieving mother may understand a little bit about what's going on with the father of her unborn child. Because, I mean, miscarriage is not something that spouses or couples grieve together. They grieve on different cycles, and oftentimes that causes a lot of stress. But one of the most difficult things is when you think that you're doing something wrong because your spouse or your partner is not experiencing it the same way that you are.
That would be true. And I think that everyone grieves differently and thinks differently sometimes, but they don't know if they should be. Because of our society, I really believe that they wouldn't go get counseling. They wouldn't do a lot of different things that you would normally do. Because, especially men, I think men hold in a lot more than they should. And they need to open up a little bit more. Am I right?
I think that's definitely true, and part of that comes from the fact that, in our experience, even our most well-meaning friends, when we talked about our miscarriages, the questions that I would get was, how's Christine doing, and is there anything that we can do to help her help her recover? And so even in that discussion about offering care, there's this tacit message that the father is silent and the father doesn't matter. And so having something that says, no, it's right, the father is a real person in this experience, and that opens the door, and then you can face the fact that there's this broader social pressure for men not to emote and to shove things down and say, I'm not asking you to necessarily come up with your own words, but here are words of somebody who's walked this path, and to the extent that they're helpful, please use them.
And on that note, we're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be right back on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk with Sean Collins and his new book. We'll be right back.
It's a healthy dose of reality with Catherine Raker that delivers delicious results. The Chef You and I is a reality show that expresses the message of healthy eating. The Chef You and I will teach you new ways to prepare high-calorie entrees and desserts into healthy alternatives. See The Chef You and I on the Telos Digital TV Network. For more info about The Chef You and I or to become a guest chef, just go to CatherineRaker.com.
What do you do? Many families face a common problem, caring for loved ones sometimes hundreds or thousands of miles away or even across town. Well, now there's help. When you or your loved one needs help at home, First Light Home Care offers complete companion and personal care services for cooking, cleaning, helping with personal hygiene, or just keeping company. First Light Home Care has trusted, highly trained caregivers who know what to do. Visit firstlighthomecare.com to find your local office. First Light Home Care. Extraordinary people. Exceptional care.